Inside the Bearcats podcast. I'm Paul Daner Jr., and I'm here to take you behind the curtain of UC Athletics, where we'll discuss all the topics that UCU care about, and quite a few that you really don't care about. All right, let's go.
8 seconds to go. SK dribbles into the front court. Kilpatrick pulls up from three. His shot, good! 2.5 to go! Kilpatrick buries one. Green out to Abernathy, looking for a block. He's got it. Down to the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Bearcats!
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the Inside the Bearcats podcast. We are back inside of the new media suite, which only means we will be given the soft, supple tones of Tommy G back with us. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. They're soft. They're supple. I'm happy to be here with you, and welcome back inside the New Media Palace. We're happy to have you, and crystal clear podcasting ability here on this lovely Thursday afternoon.
Is it make it awkward that I called your tone supple?
Nope. You're not the first, and hopefully not the last. Just keep it to my tones.
That's really all you can. I mean, that's all you can really ask for, though, as a broadcaster. Oh, yeah. when you're so aware of your tones.
That's true. Unless you compare my tones to Paul Keel's, in which case that's okay, too. Yeah. You're welcome to do that anytime.
Or you could be like, I mean, no one would call Artrell Hawkins' tone supple.
No, probably not.
They're deep and overwhelming.
An endless list of broadcasters who would pay to have his pipes.
This is true. Are you amongst them? Did you ever wish that you had like the real deep brooding voice?
I don't know that I ever wished it, but it definitely gets you noticed. I mean, if that's how you open your broadcast, that it'll get more people's attention. I'll tell you that much.
Could you have like the, you know, put a little talk box like the ones they put on guys when they're trying to change their voices?
You know how you do that? You smoke 17 packs of cigarettes a day for a month, and your voice will sound like Artrell Hawkins or Paul Keel's or Joel Myers.
Are you calling them?
No, some people are naturally gifted and naturally have that. However, the only way to get your voice like that, the only unnatural way to get your voice like that, is to smoke like 130 Marlboro, unfiltered Marlboros a day.
The perfect amount of rasp. That's hard to find.
It's hard, and then it's gone.
Well,
yeah, and then you have it down, and I'll probably also have lung cancer and have just seriously cut your life expectancy. So that's not good either.
And kids,
we're not encouraging that.
No,
by any
certainly
means.
Not.
All you have to do is look at me and all of my endless success, endless success, and see that I overcame that without ever touching a cigarette. So kids, and I know you're tuning in.
If you want to be like Tommy G,
all these kids have iPods today and iPhones and iPod touches and. Mm-hmm. And iTunes and are downloading the podcast every week. So, all you youngsters out there, do not smoke cigarettes.
Don't smoke cigarettes. It'll kill you.
Yeah, simple as that.
Beyond smoking cigarettes to make your voice deeper, we can talk a little bit about what's been going on here at UC.
Has there been anything going on? It's been quiet.
Yeah, nothing. It's like nothing's happening. I mean, it's the blog and the video pages are pumping right now. You've got the sports wrapping up, you've got sports starting up, you've got spring football going on, obviously March, which means basketball. It's been pretty crazy. We all made the trip down to Louisville, all of us inside the new media suite, for the game down at Yum. Didn't turn out very well for the Bearcats, but for the media contingent, the Yum is a great place to visit if you haven't been. Now, this was the first time that UC has gone down there because just weird scheduling of the Big East. They haven't been going down. They had to come here. Louisville came here a couple of times, and they played one of the last games in Freedom Hall before they built the new Yum Center. So this was the first treat for us to see this new facility.
Now, I had been there with women's basketball.
Oh, okay.
So it was my second time.
Your second time. First time for a men's game and with the whole the full shebang they do for that, which is
impressive.
It's quite impressive, and I can only say, I really think more than anything, you know, beautiful facility, all the seats, so many suites, just sprawling space, state of the art everywhere. But really, it was most impressive to me. They had a cookie attendant at halftime.
They did.
They not only do they have halftime cookies, and that's great. I mean, who doesn't love a halftime cookie?
Right.
There was an attendant to give you whatever flavor exactly you wanted, but more so to monitor people. And I don't want to name names that would maybe do such
video
things.
Shame.
Yeah, that would take too many cookies, and then there wouldn't be enough for everybody else.
Right.
To have someone who their job is strictly to attend to the cookies, I thought was the most impressive thing I saw at the Yum Center.
Now, how many did you ask for?
Just one. I didn't know. I
asked
was nervous.
Two.
Were you nervous?
Two. No, not at all.
I got nervous around the cookie tent. I kind of froze.
They were small cookies. We're not talking about.
They were small, but I didn't know what the protocol there was. I normally just go up and take however many I'm feeling, but there was a line behind me.
So had there been no cookie attendant, how many would you have taken?
Two to three,
and stashed a few for postgame.
I can't confirm nor deny that.
Okay, that's fair.
It's complete speculation.
Uh huh. That's fair.
We're speculating on speculation.
Two, and I'm curious to if you would ask for three, what the look would have been like from the cookie attendant.
Do you think she – well, now I will say there was a buffet attendant that was very rough with some of the people. If the ladle
if
was
you
getting –
you left the ladle
you
on
left
the hot
the ladle
cheese.
In the hot cheese, there was yelling.
Smacked, and if you forgot to sign in?
You better sign in. I mean, it was run like an army facility. I mean, you were in and out of the mess
hall. But it was delicious.
It was delicious. It was
you were allowed
fantastic.
To go for seconds.
Or thirds. Some people.
Bill Cook.
Yeah.
We and again, not to name names.
No,
we're not here to call anybody out. But
no, not at all.
So – yeah, it was impressive. Now, we were on the far side of the court from the entrance to the media room because now, if you remember, there was another member of the media who may or may not have already come up who may have snuck a cookie early.
Yeah.
Who bribed one of the caterers to get a cookie before the game even started. Now, when I witnessed his bribe go down, there was cookies with frosting on it. Did you see the cookies with frosting? Because
those
by the time
were not available when the attendant was there.
Because it took forever to get all the way around the court. Mm-hmm.
Which we said that we should have sent somebody in ahead of time with a minute and a half left to go scout it out.
But there was a lot going on in the game.
There was a lot going on
in the
game.
It was a very intense contest at that point.
It was. And which takes me to the other point that I'd like to make about the Yum Center, which is that, you know, there really isn't a bad seat in the house there at the Yum Center, except for maybe two.
Yours and Bill Cook's.
Bill Cook's. We were about 2 feet in front of the band. Which was
not just the band,
full on drum kit, John Bonham solo going on directly behind me. Every time there
every
was a
time
stall,
there a basketball wasn't being dribbled.
Yes, constantly, and you knew it was coming because the director would just yell it out. All right, ready. And from that point forward, you had about a half a second to
get fingers and ears.
Yes, and just try. It was impossible. I actually, not only that, you know who else likes to hang out by the band? The Cardinal mascot. You know who has a ridiculously strong tail, which is, I don't know if it's made of concrete and forced into the upward position, but it literally the second I sat down, slapped me right in the back of the head. I got slapped by the Cardinal tail.
So you got slapped by the cardinal tail and had the drums in your ears. I got slapped in the head by the pom-pom from the Lady Birds.
Yes.
So you lose.
I clearly lost.
You lost.
Well, I could have told you that. Regardless of what happened to you, I was losing.
How long? It's been now 3 days almost since the game ended. How long did the ringing last for in your ears? At least until midday Tuesday.
I assume that Mick said something in the post-game interview, but I really don't know what it was. I had to go back and listen to it a couple days later. I mean, it lasted probably about a day. I mean, certainly the next morning, it felt like it was after the Metallica concert type deal where it's starting to subside. It was unbearable.
It was intense.
So that was the yum. But I mean, you know, the facility was fantastic. The game did not go as well for UC. That 21 turnovers really doomed the day. But had the win over UConn on Saturday. So if you're into the bracketology thing and you're looking at all of that, UC in right now,
I would say pretty solidly
right now. I mean, you're seeing anywhere from 8. I've seen 8 to 12. Anywhere in that range I've seen from the legit people.
Well, and some people, if anybody can write up a bracket, they put it on their blog.
Have you seen I always link to the bracket matrix. Have you ever gone to that
where
link?
It does every single
every,
there's bracket.
60 of them. There are literally 61, and you have to be other ones besides the ones they're just putting on there. And it ranks all of them and takes an average of what everybody thinks, which at the end of the day, though, you only need about 5 of them that are actually.
And all you really need to do is have your name called on that selection Sunday. It doesn't
exactly.
And then you got a chance. And I think right now with a win over USF on Saturday. You know, the Bearcats are solidly in. Some people have asked, well, Villanova looks like they're solidly in now. Does that hurt? Well, remember the Bearcats beat Villanova pretty handily here at Fifth Third Arena. So I think that actually helps their whole situation with the success that Villanova has had, not only before that game, but since then as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that Villanova win looks a lot better than we certainly thought it was going to at the time. I mean, they had good wins, but now they have beaten basically the top four teams, essentially, in the league, with Marquette as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've beaten Marquette, Louisville, Syracuse, and now Georgetown.
That's a pretty good year.
I'm pretty sure nobody's done that. I mean,
and Providence has beat Villanova twice.
Yeah. Villanova is as schizophrenic as any team in the Big East right now. Let's talk a little bit about the Big East tournament possibilities. We were running through this a little bit later. Currently, it could end up anywhere from the 8-9 game, there's going to be two games on Tuesday, which is going to be, we already know, is going to be Rutgers versus DePaul and Seton Hall versus South Florida, a veritable battle of titans at MSG there. And that will give you essentially your tournament, which will set up as 5 versus 12, 6, 11, yada, yada, with the 8-9 being the middle game. Right
and
now,
7-10 being the other one that's of interest right now, I would say.
Yeah, and you've got Providence, St. John's, UC, and
Villanova
are all sort of in that mix. So the question being, of that mix, who do you want? Who do you want if you're UC?
Well, I think, honestly, with the way it appears as though the wheels are falling off St. John's season.
Yeah.
I mean, they have spiraled since that great start. And granted, you know, they probably had an easier section of the Big East schedule early on to get off to that great start in conference play, but they've had a rough go of it as late. You saw Sir Dominic Pointer got into a fight the other night. I mean,
that was awful, by the way.
An ugly scene in that game against Notre Dame, and I know he's suspended for just one game. But I think with the way that it appears that the wheels have fallen off, I think you want St. John's.
Yeah.
You want St. John's, even though the only thing you don't like about that is that Madison Square Garden is their home court. So – But
I would, you know, UC's had as much success there in March as anybody.
That doesn't, I mean, you beat Syracuse there last year. Syracuse at times feels like Madison Square Garden.
The last 3 years, I mean,
is a home court. Right.
They've won at least one game and made a nice run two of those 3 years.
Right. So you're right. I mean, I wouldn't say that that's the end of the world. And, but the Bearcats have beaten Villanova. If, you know, you want to be as high seeded as possible, 8 or 9, obviously. But if you slip to 10, now you're playing at 7 p.m. and not noon. And 7 p.m., I know for the young men that wear red and black, tends to be a more attractive time slot than noon.
Noon? It was a couple of years ago where this team, we literally researched the statistics on them during the season. They could not win before 2 p.m. It was 2 years ago. They just, for whatever reason, had just struggles ever doing anything before 2 o'clock. But I would say, from my angle, I think you're right. St. John's is your ideal opponent. From there, you lost to Providence and beat Villanova, but I'd still rather play Providence. Even though Providence is playing great right now, they've won, I believe, 8 of 9.
Yeah,
they've definitely had the easier portion of their schedule.
I think you kind of like having the revenge factor, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that Mick will play it up very much, but, you know, when you talk about getting guys' attention – when you could point and say, guys, these guys beat you.
Yeah.
They beat you on this date. Here's the film. This is how they did it. And, I mean, you should be motivated anyways in the conference tournament, but that might help a little bit.
Yeah, I think the way Villanova has played, where they've played very well against good teams and in big moments, I think that makes them very dangerous in New York. Because I think you get everybody's best effort there. I mean, the lights are on. It's the big show.
Right.
Whereas I just think as far as top-end ability, Providence is not anywhere near as high as Villanova. And I think that you have a better chance against them. So, ironically, I would rather play the team that beat UC than the one that they beat. But all, yet to be seen exactly how that will break down. We'll get you all those details at GoBearCats.com after the games.
Late Saturday. I think there's about 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. They're expected to announce the official pairings, and we'll have the brackets then. But it will be a Wednesday game.
Noon or 7.
It looks like right now.
I haven't got the word officially from the Big East, but I don't think it can be anything else. The Bearcats can't be lower than 10, and they can't catch Villanova at 7.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're looking at 8, 9, or 10. Two-thirds of those scenarios have it at noon, and one of them has it at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
So.
And those four teams will be the four teams in those games. Those are set, too. All the way, everything breaks down because Syracuse won't fall all the way to a 7. They can't. So it'll be some combination of those games. We shall see who it will be. Of course, you know, checking here all week. You'll be in New York, right?
Yes, sir.
You guys
are
going
Monday night.
The whole team. On the way.
The dynamic duo.
Dynamic duo.
Video Shane and TG.
There'll be lots of
City
coming
bound.
Back.
Yes. Well, previews and, you know, and then you combine in, you know, the voice of the Bearcats, the radio voice, Dan Hoard, and as well as the impeccable Chuck Mayshock, who, you know, I don't think many people understand this, but Chuck, when we shoot those game previews and the city scenes in Vegas was a classic one, he likes to play artistic director.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he likes to pick the background for the
really.
It started in Vegas, and he wanted to do like 7 different shots in Vegas for one game preview, like in front of like 6 historic casinos and then the Strip, to get just in case anybody was confused about where we were. He wanted to make sure we showed all the historic casinos in the background.
He probably would have requested they bring your new fancy rolling camera that you guys have.
Yeah.
You could have done maybe a moving shot, get some boom.
It's called a glider.
A glider.
A glider.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I just know it moves on wheels.
Yes, but yeah,
they bring that for Chuck.
It's carried on throughout the regular season beyond just Vegas. Like, and you know, Video Shane and I have split up the regular season trips, and I've heard reports of him wanting to set the scene in the background, and I've witnessed it on some road trips as well. I mean, Pittsburgh, we did it in the hotel lobby, and he was like disgusted that was the best I could come up with.
Maybe.
Now, New York opens up a whole
myriad
of opportunities.
Observation deck, Empire State Building.
I mean, it's not out of the question.
I mean, I'm sure if we had Chuck here, we know what his vote would be.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the view.
There's no question.
Think about the view.
He might want to do it at the Statue of Liberty. He's going to want to open the Statue of Liberty and wrap up on the observation deck, probably.
Well,
and then maybe go to Central Park, too, for
of course.
Know, good measure.
You guys do it while he plays checkers against somebody.
Now, the only question is... Tuesday it might be Dan and I on the game on the preview for Wednesday, or on the Welcome to New York story, because Chuck's daughter lives in Connecticut, and last year we had a similar type situation with a day to work in the city before playing on Thursday, you know, and he rented a car and went to Connecticut, which also brought up the situation where I had to start preparing to do the game with Dan on the off chance that Chuck never made it back from Connecticut. We were a little worried he'd get lost and not make it back for the game.
I can't imagine such a thing happening.
He made it. That's all we need to say.
So before we get to New York and the latest Quentin Tarantino movie shot with Chuck Mayshock, senior night here on Saturday against USF, Jaquan Parker, Kashmir Wright, Alex Appelsteiner, Sheck Mudge. I want to focus on Jaquan and Cash in particular. I want to play you something that Mick said today at the availability, which I was asking him about. Mick talks a lot in recruiting about recruiting to a profile, and you have to when you're UC and you're not consistently – you're not Kentucky grabbing the top 5 guys coming out every year. You have to find guys that fit what you want to do. And he's always been able to find a way of guys that just fight tooth and nail to the end. It's a certain type of player. There's been the key to their success here is by recruiting toughness, really, which is hard to quantify. Jaquan Parker is the perfect example of that. He has been since he's gotten here, and I thought that was really – so here's Mick talking about toughness and how you find that and what it means specifically in regards to Jaquan Parker.
Well, there's two kind of players, guys that help you win games and guys that don't. And the guys that help you win games, they can do it in a multitude of ways. But if you can't get stuff done, it's hard to get done. You're not going to make it as a player. And what happens, you get to this level, and it becomes hard to do the things you could do in high school. And you got to have a toughness about you, and you can win games with Jaquan Parker. because he can get it done against any opponent, because he can raise his level of play, his focus, his toughness. And when it gets tough, you can count on him. And that's why, you know, some guys may have talent, but they may not necessarily be able to help you win games. When I say win games, I'm talking about real games, you know, against real opponents and tough battles. And you can always count on a guy like Jaquan Parker.
So Parker is he's a different dude. I mean, he just is. He's a different type of player. Give me some of your favorite Jaquan Parker moments from here, because there's been a number of them. The first one that sticks out to me, though, is the Florida State game from last year.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just – I thought it defined him to a T.
Well, and like you said, he's as tough as they get. John Rothstein, a national writer, loves him and loves to tweet about how tough he is, and he proved it. That whole NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
He led the Bearcats in rebounding in a team that had a young man named Yancey Gates, who was slightly taller than Jaquan Parker, and a guy with a ton of energy in Justin Jackson. And Jaquan Parker led that team in rebounding. So –
We had 11. Yeah. He had like 11 boards in that game, and Florida State's front line was all 6'10", 6'11".
Right.
I mean, just amongst the trees, and he went up over and over again and found a way to pull down rebounds. It was amazing.
And if you remember, you know, a lot of people after his sophomore year, which he didn't do a lot, he did some. He contributed as a true freshman, didn't do a lot as a sophomore, and a lot of people probably thought he should transfer, that he should leave and give Mick a scholarship, that Mick should run him out if that's what you believe in. Which Mick clearly doesn't believe in. But he did talk to Jaquan about all of his options over the summer, and Mick wanted him to stay but wanted him to work harder. And he felt like he got complacent in that sophomore year. And then he got hurt at the beginning of camp, and he missed the first six games. And his first game back
was Xavier,
at Xavier, which everybody knows how that turned out. And he actually played pretty well, which nobody remembers because of how that game ended. But he played pretty well considering he had been hurt, hadn't practiced a whole lot. And then one of the things I'll remember is that moving forward then, when the guys were suspended and that team had their back against the wall and nobody in this country believed in him, he was out there hustling his tail off and helping pull that team together. And he's not going to be a huge rah-rah leader. He's going to do it quietly and by example. But he was out there in that stretch just rallying the troops and hustling and grabbing rebounds and scoring points. And he was a big part of the reason that last season turned in the way it did.
Yeah, Mick brings this up anytime, which I would endlessly ask him about the effects of the brawl, and he would always point out that what people never talk about was that was the other connection there was that's when we finally got Jaquan Parker back. People want to credit the brawl and how it affected the team. That had an effect, but he always has claimed to this day the bigger effect of that was Parker being back, because he was gonna be such a big part of what that team had to be, and he was. That's when they changed over to the offense. That was a wide open four guard. That was because you had Jaquan Parker, who could play the four as a guard and still come down with all the. You wouldn't lose anything on the offensive glass,
right.
And that's really what changed the game. But I will. Whenever I think of Jaquan Parker, and maybe the memories will, there will be new ones that he'll put on. There's still a few games left, but that Florida State game. In the tournament when he just owned the glass against a bunch of guys he was giving up 6-7 inches to was just unbelievable, and one that's going to be really cool. Cashmere Wright fits in that same mold in a different way.
Yep.
As far as recruiting toughness, I mean, this is a guy that has had every injury you could possibly imagine, and you don't even know it. Because he just plays through all of them, and he never says anything, you know, unless we ask him over and over again how his shoulder, his knee is.
Right.
And he toughs it out. You talk about tournament games, the Missouri game.
Yep.
I guess it was his redshirt sophomore year. Or no, it was his junior.
Oh, it was his junior.
Yeah, junior. Yeah.
No, that was his sophomore year.
Sophomore year, yeah, because they won tournament.
His third year, but
his third year.
Sophomore year, yeah.
Redshirt sophomore year. He essentially, the days between the first round and second round game.
He was in a bad way.
They had to work him out in a pool off site with the lights off because he was having migraines, I believe, and his knees
was so bad, and he just needed to be scoped. Yeah,
but he was basically on one leg, and he played his butt off in that win over Missouri, and outplayed Phil Pressey and all those guys at Missouri with one leg. I mean, you talk about toughness. He's got it.
Oh yeah, and two quotes that I really took away. And we feature him on Bearcat Sports Weekly tonight on Fox Sports Ohio, and it's a great feature. And there's other guys who talk about him, and then he talks about his whole experience. And I'll never forget, it was my first year doing the TV show for Fox Sports Ohio that he came in as a true freshman. And with all that hype and to be the point guard, we were like, you know, we need to put him on our season preview show. So I don't know that I'd even met him until that day. And he came down, and I'll never forget doing an interview with him, and he's this squeaky-voiced 18-year-old freshman. And – you know, but he has all the energy in the world, and he was a really good interview for an 18-year-old freshman. You don't get many 18-year-old freshmen. And he walked out, I leave the producer, David Ashbrock, and we're like, that was really good. We're going to be able to use that. And within 48 hours, he tore his ACL. And I called David and said, remember that really good interview? You can't use any of it because it's irrelevant now because he's done for the year. And so that, you know, was a big bummer. And I asked him when we were doing the feature, I said, how much – you know, did that change everything? How much do you look back on that and say, man, it was, you know, it turned out to be a positive. And he said when he was a true freshman, he came to campus, he said he was convinced he was one and done to the NBA. That was it.
Yeah.
He was one and done, going to play 1 year for the Bearcats, and he would be in the NBA. And he said it changed his whole perspective, all for the better. And, you know, 5 years later, here he is wrapping up a spectacular career. And then you talk about all those injuries he's overcome. I asked Sean Kilpatrick about that. I said, does anybody really know? Do you even know? He said, no. He said, you know what his body looks like? That he's been in a 6-year car wreck.
Well, it's funny you talk about him thinking he was going to be one and done and how everything changed. I remember sitting down with him when I did the podcast with him and Sean Kilpatrick last year in Sean's apartment. And we were talking just about everything that he'd been through and about their perspective going into this season. And all he could say was, you know, I'm not in a hurry at all. I'm the kind of guy right now that I just want to sit back and enjoy. I hope it takes forever. I want to take it all in. I just want to enjoy everything. I really enjoy the experience. And he is one of those guys. He's real thoughtful and just loves enjoying the moment and he's been one of my favorite guys ever to cover. He's just a real good guy.
He says meaningful things.
Yeah.
He's a good dude. He's meant a lot to this program.
Yeah.
And the rebuilding project for Mick Cronin, because he needed a point guard in a big way. You know, at the time that Mick called on him. And he believed in Coach Cronin, and Coach Cronin believed in him, and that relationship has continued for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. So certainly it's going to be – I know Cash said himself he's trying not to think about Saturday because it's going to be – he admitted it's going to be pretty emotional for him. He's going to have his fiance, his daughter's going to be there. His parents are both going to be – are going to be there. It's – you know, and they don't – not at all the games. So it's going to be a special one for him. I know he's excited. But I hope everybody's going to come out there.
20 minutes before tip, about 3:40 – ish, about 3:40. If you're in your seats by 3:40, you won't miss senior day. And I tweeted about this yesterday, and I think it's pretty cool. Sheck Mudge's parents have flown all the way in from Dakar, Senegal.
Wow.
Now, they've been here for about a week. You're not just going to do that for the game. Flying Friday, go back Sunday.
Better win that game.
Yeah. They've been here for a little bit. But, you know, it was cool 2 years ago when Ibrahim Thomas came out and Hep Cronin walked him out because he didn't have family and his family wasn't able to be here. But I think it's pretty darn neat that that Sheck with his family from thousands and thousands of miles, you know, came across the globe, and that he'll be able to walk out with his mom and dad.
Yeah, that will be awesome. So make sure you get your seats by 3:40 if you're going to the game. Should we go in? And, you know, the Bearcats need a win. I mean, Cash himself was saying, you know, he looks at it's a must-win game. He said, I don't track the brackets, things like that, but from everything that you see and you know, it brings a lot of things you don't want to think about into play if you lose to USF.
Right.
So certainly they're going to need everything they can get out of that game, needing a win. Real quick, before we – by the way, why is it – there should have been – when you were in college, was there a senior night for broadcasters? There should be some celebration of the media types. We work too, you know? I feel like they should. If you were a senior at Syracuse, you were. You know,
since when have media had a hard time finding a place to celebrate?
This is true, but we need to be honored for all the hard work that we do bringing people the stories about these athletes that they love.
That's a good point.
I didn't know. Maybe something happened for you and all your success and your fame that you had in your illustrious career.
No, not so much.
Yeah. I feel like we should look into this.
Maybe like a media timeout. It's called a media timeout. Maybe you honor the media in a media timeout.
All the cheerleaders and the dancers all get out there. They get honored.
But over the course of history, and again, we're not naming names, but there's some people, media, if they parade across the court, might create more problems than not.
Like tearing ACL just trying to walk across
the
court.
Well, that's not what I was saying, fan reaction.
No.
that's where I was going. That fans don't always appreciate the media.
They don't.
And I don't know that you or I would get booed.
I'd hope not.
But depending on who gets paraded across the court.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I don't know.
It would change things.
And again, the media's never had a problem finding a way to have their own private celebration.
Yeah, this is true. We
maybe we'll have a tweet-ups aren't as popular anymore. Maybe we'll have a media tweet-up celebration.
Tweet-ups aren't as popular anymore?
I don't know. Maybe they are.
I thought they were. I thought it was something that was still happening.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm just not being invited.
You just killed tweet-ups. You just said, I'm done. Tweet-ups are done. Tommy G says, we're done.
I say they're done.
It's officially trending down now.
Yep.
The Tommy G
bump. MySpace and tweet-ups. Done.
You just
Fridays. Done.
It's like in a Christmas story when the kid's going back trying to get to Santa Claus, and Santa just gives him a gentle little nudge down the slide. Yeah. That's you to tweet-ups. Just killed a trend.
Well, I said we could do one.
Yeah, but you said they were not cool anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. But if anybody can make it cool again, it's you and me.
Yeah, so maybe we'll bring it back. We'll kill it just to bring it back.
You see? This is brilliance. People are witnessing brilliance. We're 29 minutes into the podcast.
I'm pretty sure that's not what they're talking about. But we should probably end it on that.
Football schedule?
Yeah.
Quickly?
Oh, yeah. You're right. We do need to talk football schedule.
2 minutes.
And you're right.
Brought it with me, so
Well, run it down then. Since you brought it with you, you're printing out a piece of paper and everything.
The non-conference schedule, had already been announced, so we don't have to work on that too much.
Right.
Go ahead
and say that anyway. Though.
All right.
Just remind
Purdue
people.
At home, August 31st. September 7th at Illinois. A week later, September 14th, Northwestern State here at Nippert Stadium, and then a week later, the battle for the victory bell in Oxford, Ohio at Miami, and then a bye to wrap up September. Then it's all Big East the rest of the way, or whatever it's called.
Whatever
it's called on October 5th. The Bearcats will open league play.
League play.
League play will not be what I said. It'll be something else. October 5th at USF, so a trip to Tampa. October 5th, then a Friday night tilt at home. October 11th against Temple. October 19th. Connecticut here back on a Saturday, then a bye October 26th. So a little rest after three Big East games sets things up well. Then at Memphis, a rare Wednesday night game, but a national TV audience. And that'd be the only game on that Wednesday night on ESPN2 at Memphis, 8 p.m. game. Then November 9th will be SMU here on a Saturday. November 16th at Rutgers. November 23rd, a trip down to Houston, Texas to see Connor Barwin and a battle down there against UH. And then actually, the Bearcats are off Thanksgiving weekend, which is, again,
nice
to get some rest. Leading up to a Thursday night season finale, Nippert Stadium rocking and rolling against a rival Louisville on ESPN. So national TV, Thursday night game, potentially you could see TV and the league folks setting it up to potentially be a conference championship game, since there will not be a formal conference championship game this year. I think the schedule sets up really, really well.
I'd agree. And the possibility of that Louisville game could be the last game between these two schools for a long time, depending on what happens. Last keg of nails that you want to have that one in your trophy case. And Louisville will be the unanimous preseason number one, barring some offseason injury to Teddy Bridgewater.
They'll be the conference pick when everybody gets up to Newport at the end of July.
And UC will be up in that discussion, which I think is why you see that game where it is. The Wednesday game with the bye actually sets up nicely because you basically get a week and a half to prepare for two opponents.
Yeah.
So you add it's almost an extra bye week
when you get
the Wednesday game in that place. It's not like you have a short week at all. So it actually works out kind of well.
If you look at it, the only short week on the entire season is that Friday for Temple following the USF road game. That's the only time that you'll have 6 days or less to prepare for a game.
Yeah, it looks it really is a favorable schedule, and it's interesting. You know, the strength of it. Purdue will be your most difficult non-conference game. They have a new coach, so you'll have two new coaches facing off in that opener, which is always you never want to have the new coach against the team that has an old coach and bringing a lot of guys back. That can be a little more difficult task. So your most difficult deal, which is the first game, you're going to learn so much under the new regime here, is up another team dealing with the same thing. So you have that Purdue game. Illinois was atrocious last year. They were 2-10, lost every Big Ten game.
But you got to go into their house.
You do have to go into their house. Not that it's going to be a walkover, but, you know, you certainly – it's more winnable of those two. And then, you know, your most difficult of the conference opponents, your next really, you know, the high-end opponent is you get down to Rutgers, depending on what's going on with them. And you never know. Things can change. But, I mean, you have a long – you have a chance to really –
You could rattle some – you could be rattling off some wins, be in a really good place.
That
going
Purdue game
to
could
Rutgers,
be really
right.
big. I mean, that Purdue game could be really big as far as, you know, getting a lot of national attention and run
and,
for
and
whatever
it,
they're doing.
And it gets you a lot of confidence early on. Remember, you know, Butch Jones had a very tough task in going into an almost impossible place to play at Fresno. I mean, you were at that game.
Yeah.
That was a really tough assignment, and you lose a lot of that momentum and excitement for a new head coach when you lose that first game. Is it the end of the world? No. Butch still had a great career here at Cincinnati. He won a lot of football games. But, you know, like you said, you win that opener and you're at home, that just starts carrying a lot of momentum forward.
Yeah, yeah. So the schedule's now out. So, you know, everybody can start making your plans for your hotels, for your trips, some new cities to check out this year.
I'm excited about Houston.
I think Houston
I've been to Memphis,
be a good
but
time.
I'm excited about Houston.
Is Connor going to take you out when you get down there? Have you reached out?
You know, it's funny. We were texting the other day, and then the schedule came out. I'm going to follow up on that.
Yeah, well, I saw you tweeting at him about Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Well, clearly, yeah. He was asking if he should go to Bruno Mars or Bone Thugs and Harmony tonight.
There's a concert? I didn't know that they were both doing concerts.
I assume that's
you're
what
he was
asking.
You have such a Cleveland bias.
East.
I mean,
come on.
I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't pick the same thing, but I think that who you would choose.
Bone Thugs and Harmony 15 years later.
That can't be looking real good. They've got to be struggling at this point. Lazy Bones. Lazy Bones. You talk about a 6-year train wreck for your body. Lazy Bones, yeah. I'm sure, been through it.
16-year train wreck.
Yeah.
You better wrap it up.
Well, we're gonna wrap it up. So make sure you check out that schedule. Get all your stuff set.
And if you're Houston, go see Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yes, obviously. But remember, Saturday, USF, 4 o'clock is the game. 3:40 be in your seats for the senior night festivities. And then you'll be hearing everything you need and seeing everything you need from New York next week when Tommy and the crew will be up there at the Big East Tournament and see how UC fares up there. But for now, the supple tones of Tommy G and myself are going to sign off.
So long.
And we'll talk to you next week on Inside the Bearcats podcast.